You are listening to the African Life Podcast with Agbo Uwabo. Each show, I will cover topics such as African culture, lifestyle, and politics from both home and away. To interact with the show, email studio@redshiftonline.org. This is Agbo Uwabo, your regular host, the African Life Show. With me today is Dr. Tolu Olariwaju to discuss about migration and culture. Dr. Tolu, you are welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Please, can you tell us more about yourself?
All right, thank you. I am Dr. Tolu Olariwaju. By profession, I'm an economist and an artist. So I have a BSc in economics, an MSc in international economics, a postgraduate degree in teaching and learning in higher education. I have a PhD in economics, specialized in the fields of entrepreneurship. I also teach management courses, business courses, international business courses here at Staffordshire University. I am also an artist, so I've trained with the Birmingham Theatre School. And so I combine education, academia, and art. And that's about me.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tolu. What is your understanding about migration and culture?
Thank you very much. That's a very good question, especially nowadays. Let's start with migration, first of all. Migrants are people who move from, say, a country, probably their home country, to a host country, right? And there are three main reasons why migrants move. The first one are pull factors, okay? So positive reasons, for instance, for education, for economic opportunities, people might move from one country to the next. The second reason why people move is for push factors, okay? So these are usually negative connotations. So things like war, persecution, conflict, injustice would force people to leave one country and go to another country. And then finally, you have network factors, okay? So, if you have a network, maybe friends, family, spouses, and things like that, you might also migrate. So these are the reasons why people migrate. What is culture itself? Culture is a set of attitudes and belief. So programming that distinguishes one group of people from another. For instance, you can talk about British culture, you know, talk about American culture, Asian culture, African culture. Okay, so these are a set of beliefs and ideas, usually informal. It's usually not written, although nowadays we're codifying and we're writing these things down. And these things help to distinguish one set of people from another. When you look at the link between migration and culture, you find out that people are usually drawn to places that have the same culture as them. Think about where we are now. We're in the United Kingdom, Stoke-on-Trent to be precise. Okay, so there's certain things that come along with that. The speaking of the English language is one example. The lingua franca of the world, you know, there's certain things we do. The rule of law, democracy, the parliamentary system, okay, tolerance, for other people, you know, the freedom of speech, gender equality, racial equality, things like this, they distinguish us. You know, if you go to other places in the world, for instance, you might find that things are slightly different. There is a link, you know. Migrants contribute to the culture of a place, and the culture would also determine or would also attract a certain caliber of migrants. So these are very sensitive issues, especially now. You know, we have this anti-globalization movement. You know, but there's no country that can grow without migrants. So migrants contribute to the culture, and migrants are also supposed to integrate. There's this fine line between integration and contribution that usually we have to discuss in the literature. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I believe you are from Nigeria. Please, can you tell us what part of Nigeria you are from and the culture you are used to?
Thank you very much. That's a very interesting question. Okay, it's going to be a slightly interesting answer. So my parents are Yoruba, but I was born in Jos, in Plateau State, which is sort of north central part of Nigeria, sort of the Hausa part, you know. And growing up, I had friends from all parts of the country. I had Igbo friends, I had Nupe, Efik, Ibibio, Edo, Delta, you name them. You know, just was a good melting pot at the time. At the time, before one set of culture tried to impose on the other, you know, this was a type of harmony. You know, it's not like now, you know, with the foolishness that we have going on, you know, with one set of people thinking they're better than the others and trying to impose a racial ideology or a religious ideology on the others. At the time, it wasn't like that. So, you know, it was a good melting pot. So I was born in Jos, but then my parents moved to Lagos, you know, where Yoruba. My parents are actually from Kwara State, Irepoduro Local Government, Oko, to be precise. So growing up, I sort of didn't feel like I was, you know, too alien from any culture. You know, you would turn on the TV, you would watch British programs like Doctor Who, you know, you look at American cartoons, you know, like Spider-Man, you know, X-Men, you know. So it was, you know, I really didn't know that I had to belong to a particular culture, you know, until much later in life. But when my parents moved to Lagos, you know, I finished my primary school and secondary school. I went to Air Force Military School. Then I started to notice, you know, certain things, you know, people speaking certain languages, certain things would be expected, you know, certain people hanging out. And then from there, I moved to FGC Ilorin, which is also Yoruba. And then when I finished my secondary education, I moved to Babcock University, Ilesan Remo, once again Yoruba. But once again, was a good melting pot in Ilorin, Ogun State, you know, maybe because of educational institutions. These tend to attract people regardless of their ethnicity. So you'd have people there from, you know, you have Yoruba, you'd have Igbo, you know, you'd have Hausa, you know, you'd have Nupe. It was a good mix. And then all throughout this time, I was living in Lagos with my parents, you know. And once again, Lagos is, you know, the largest city in Africa. So once again, a huge melting pot in terms of culture. You know, some of my best friends are Igbo, you know, you name them. And then when I finished, you know, I started working. I also started a business back then in Nigeria. But then I decided to go and further my studies. And this is when it became interesting, because I had the opportunity to either go to America, Canada, or the UK. But I felt that the culture of the UK was very closely aligned with my culture and my values. So, you know, I came to the UK. So, and I've been here for a while now. So I would consider myself a Black British person. So I am Yoruba. But I don't only subscribe to the Yoruba culture. You know, I have friends, like I say, from all parts of the world, white friends, Black friends, you know, Asian friends, Latino friends, you name it. And even within Nigeria, you know, I have friends from all parts of Nigeria. You know, some of my best friends are Igbo, Delta, Nupe, Efik, you name it, you know. So, if you ask me specifically where I'm from, I'm supposed to be from the Southwest, which is Yoruba, but I consider myself to be a citizen of the world, basically.
Thank you very much. Could you tell us about your settling here in the UK and what determined your choice of place in all the area?
Thank you very much. So, you know, I was just explaining that I decided to come to the UK, and this was a conscious choice. Like, you know, I could have gone to America, I could have gone to Canada, and I still visit America once in a while. I love America, you know. I still have an American visa, so I travel, and I'll be in Canada this year as well. So, but my values, I thought, were more closely aligned with British culture and British values, and I decided, and not just in the UK, I decided to go to Birmingham, to be precise. You know, I had other options. But I went to the University of Birmingham. You know, I love Birmingham. I love the UK. And, you know, certain things just stand out for me. You know, freedom of speech, expression, you know, freedom of religion, the rule of law. You know, we're trying to get to racial equality. We're not there yet, but hopefully, you know, we'll get to that promised land. You know, gender equality, things like that, you know. So for me, and this is why, you know, migration is also important, because what you find is that migrants contribute to the culture and migrants are also influenced by the culture. So for me, it was looking for a place that had my values, the kind of values that I loved and reflected, and choosing to go there. And that's how I found myself in the United Kingdom, and also right now in Stoke-on-Trent, basically for work. I got here, but it's a lovely place. So yeah.
So what is your experience and how do you practice your culture here in the UK, particularly here in Stoke-on-Trent?
Right. So I consider myself to be a part of the UK culture. So I, like I said, I'm an academic and I'm also an artist. So culturally, I think I've expressed myself more via my artistic side. So, you know, I'm a rapper, you know, an underground rapper. So I make music, I make hip hop music. I infuse Afro beats in it sometimes, you know. So Afro beats, you know, it's a kind of music. Started in West Africa, you know, Nigeria, there are Ghanaian links as well, you know, just part of high life system of West Africa. And so I've contributed to the culture here. I mostly participate in artistic events, so art events, performance events. I make albums, I make music, and also I attend church. So what one thing you find about church, especially African churches, is that, you know, we sing African songs, you know, sometimes we have an African or traditional day where we wear our African attire and we praise God in the African way. So I attend the Redeemed Christian Church of God here at Living Waters Parish in Stoke-on-Trent. And I've also been to Temple Church in Newcastle. And there's a high network there. You know, you see lots of African presence, you know. So it's very multiracial. And yeah. And also if there are events, you know, so wedding events, music events, concerts, you know, I go for those. So, you know, you might find maybe Davido is playing, Wizkid is playing, Femi Kuti, Sheon Kuti, you know, these guys come around. Or even at weddings, you know, African weddings, you know, there's no such thing as unwelcomeness in a Nigerian wedding. You know, Nigerian weddings are, you know, they're just beautiful things where people wear their traditional clothes. Everyone's smiling. You know, the food is there. The music is there. Everyone is welcome. You know, a Nigerian wedding is just a sight to behold. So you go for those, people network and, you know, things like that. So many informal events, basically, you know, and, you know, maybe through my network of friends. So that's how I practice my culture.
That's a very good answer. That takes us to the next one. With your own experience, can you say immigration has any effect on culture?
Absolutely. Immigrants and immigration itself affects culture, and culture affects immigration. So it's a bi-directional event. It swings both ways. So what do I mean by this? When you look at the migrants that you probably get, so people move for different reasons, right? So some economic reasons, educational reasons, some might be forced to go. Like people who are forced to migrate, they might not mind where they're going to, right? So it's a necessity. But those who move for opportunity will look to go to places where their culture aligns with that of their personal values. So think about what you have, especially in the world now, the rise of technology, right? Lots of firms are looking and actively seeking to recruit people who have skills that can contribute. Think about the NHS now. The NHS really needs doctors and nurses, right? So they're going and looking for these people, right? So everywhere, all the sectors in our economy, we need migrants, right? There is no country in the world that can survive without migrants, you know. And this is a narrative that, you know, we probably should be speaking about more. There's no developed country in the world that has gotten development simply on the back of its own population. You need migrants to come there to work and to give you ideas. Let's think about the biggest economies in the world. America would not be America without migrant labor, migrant ideas. America basically is a native Indian land where migrants came in, quote unquote pilgrims, and we had slave labor from the African Americans, right? So that's just a hotbed, and now that's the world's largest economy. You know, think about the UK itself. The UK would not be the UK without migrants from across the world, you know, Africa, Asia, you name it, you know, the history that we don't really like to talk about, you know, slavery and colonization, and all of that has contributed to what we know and what we love now as Britain. You know, and think about any other country in the world. You know, if you look at entrepreneurship, you find that entrepreneurial rates are higher amongst migrant communities, even if it's in to the second and third generation. So parents, then their children, and then their grandchildren. You know, you find many multinationals started by migrants. And then when you look at the culture, music, arts, sports, you know, the contribution of migrants is clear to be seen. You know, so migrants are needed, you know, but the thing there is you want to attract the right kinds of migrants. You know, you don't want to attract criminals, you know, people are going to be unjust. So there is a caveat there. You want to be attracting the right kind of people. But yes, migrants do contribute to culture, and migrants are influenced by culture too. So, you know, when I came, you know, there's something we call a culture shock, right? So you start, for instance, in Nigeria, we drive on the right side of the road. Here it's on the left side. You know, maybe someone says, something in it, you know, mate, you know, the expressions are slightly different. When I got to Stoke-on-Trent, they'll say, "A up, doc," you know, and I was like, how did the person know I was a doctor? But that's not what they meant. They meant "A up, doc." Like that's their own greeting, right? So, you know, this is the potteries. Even within countries, culture is not the same. So think about the UK. Certain things are different in London than in the north of the UK. You know, there's a Scouser accent in the north. The London culture is much different. You know, they'll say people are much nicer in certain parts of the country. You know, so even within countries, culture is not homogeneous. In Nigeria too, culture is not homogeneous. You know, there's the north, there's the south, there's the southeast, southwest, not central. Personally, as an academic, normally you would categorize a place, even a country like Nigeria, into four, you know, distinct categories. You have the north, the core north, you have the north central, you have the southeast, and you have the southwest. You know, same here in the UK. You know, there are different cultural ideologies, you know. And if you look at the countries, quote unquote, that make up the UK, Wales, England, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, you find that they have their cultural identities, and they've come to fuse into one culture, you know. And then the kind of migrants that they will attract and the kind of influences that these will have on the national culture will be different, okay? And then if you go on a global perspective, you find that our culture as a country, you know, affects the kind of people we do business with, and we also affect the global culture. So English is the lingua franca of the world, right? So we have exported, we have migrated our own culture onto parts of the world, even onto our colonies, you know, the former colonies. I say I wasn't part of the colonizers, but yeah. There is a link, you know, and it's a very significant link.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tolu. It shows that you've really, really, really into immigration and culture study. Can you just also share more light how we can balance immigration and culture?
That's a very good question, especially since immigration was one of the issues raised during the Brexit debate. You know, you had a lot of people saying, you know, all kinds of things about migrants that, you know, simply not just. And one of the things they were saying is that they were trying to retain their cultural identity, which is you know, in some ways, you know, it needs balancing. You can understand why people would say that, but it needs balancing out because we have also exported our cultures sometimes involuntarily. You know, when places were being colonized, they had no choices. But that's a very good question. How do you balance this out? It is a fine line. It's a fine line. So what you want to do as a society is you want to probably promote those cultural values that are positive, because whether we like it or not all cultures are positive. Right. And culture changes. You know, I'm not going to say everything about my culture is good. You know, there are some things I would rather not do. You know, same here. There's some things, you know. And what is culture itself? Culture is collective programming. And some would say I read something saying that culture is peer pressure from dead people, from people who have passed on, right? Okay, we're all going to pass on at some point. But, you know, think about the things that we think as culture, maybe our ancestors, maybe they had those things because it was suitable for the time. Maybe we've moved on. Maybe we have to move on, you know? So especially as we become more globalized, think about it. Now I can look at what's going on in China, in America, you know. So now we're more connected than ever. We do more business than ever. So the way our culture will change is significant. And in terms of migration as well, like I said, one of the things you want to make sure you do is to attract the right kind of people, you know. But of course, we have to be humane. You know, we can't just have people just because of what they contribute to society. You know, some people have to move because of climate change. You know, they can't farm anymore because of conflict. So it is a fine line. It is a fine line. If you're talking about how to do it practically, well, you need education. So you need to educate people on their culture. But you also need tolerance. People will also need to know that other people too have their cultures. And when these cultures interact, it is a beautiful thing. So intolerance will have to go, you know. And when you see that being done, when you see people being criticized for their culture, for the color of their skin, for their gender and things like that, those are things we cannot tolerate as a society.
Thank you very much. Looking at the African children here, what advice do you have for the parents in order to retain the African culture?
That's a very good question. African culture is a beautiful thing. And let me just throw some light on that. We don't actually appreciate that all humanity started in Africa. Whether you believe in evolution or creation, we are all Africans. White people are Africans. Asians are Africans. Because we all have African DNA to an extent. So if you're core African, you know, what we call African now, you know, dark skin, woolly hair, you know, that is clear to be seen. But even white folks, you know, the evolution of humanity, the first time we saw Homo sapien, the Homo sapien species was in Africa. We all come from Africa, you know. And even if you believe in creation, then we would have some African link because we all have African DNA. So that culture, that initial human culture is from Africa. You know, this language, speaking, civilization, organization, education, you know, it started somewhere and it started right there in Africa. And now we have spread out. You know, we've spread out. Sometimes we don't even recognize ourselves. And this will happen when, you know, the adventurers or, you know, when they came back, you know, to Africa and they couldn't recognize because time had passed, you know, people had lost their melanin, lost their skin, and then the hair was now silky. So now that we are in this time where, especially with globalization, we all speak probably a common language, you know, English is the lingua franca, maybe Chinese, French, Spanish, you know, technology has invaded our private spaces. Now, African culture, as we know it itself, you know, and when we talk about culture, are we talking about the language of the people, the music of the people, the customs, you know, the way they greet, maybe what they do in terms of marriage, you know, how you treat your elders, you know, how you respect people, things like that. These are very, very important, especially now where we're seeing all kinds of indiscipline. I call it that, you know, because I think African culture is very disciplined. There's certain things that are expected of you, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. Now, African culture is also very welcoming and it welcomes other cultures, you know, and the way to preserve this would be a combination of education, because especially here in the West, because we are always exposed to Western culture and not African culture, we forget it. So you need to educate your kids, speak your language to them, read the books to them, expose them to the music. You know, I was very lucky. You know, my parents exposed me to the music, you know, and I loved it, especially as an artist now. You know, I see it and, you know, it's just something that cannot be copied. And people are trying to copy it, you know, and in very many ways, you know, when you listen to artists like, you know, Fela Kuti, Ebenezer Obey, you know, Oliver De Cook, you know, all these are classic, you know, saying, yeah, they, you know, these are things that, you know, take you back. And these are periods in human history that are very unique. So teach them, let them see the beauty of it. If they can integrate it with Western culture, fantastic, you know, let them do it. And not just African kids, let's teach that to white people as well, because they can learn as well from our culture. Teach, you know, white, because we learn from their culture, right? So I'm speaking English now. If they can speak Yoruba and Igbo, you know, that would be a beautiful thing, wouldn't it? You know, so yeah, so let's teach them, expose them to it, and let them practice, you know. Let's just, because if you don't teach them that, other people will teach them that their culture is negative and it's bad, you know, because people will teach them that, oh, that other culture is better than yours, and that's why yours is, and they'll be ashamed, you know. But if you teach them that and they know it, nobody will be able to tell them that. I'm a proud African, you know, I have a PhD, you know, I'm an artist, you know, and when I'm there and I'm in spaces where people want to denigrate my culture, they can't do it, because if they want to talk about education, you can't, you know. So, you know, so when you do that, you know, and you have studies saying that Nigerians are, you know, the most educated migrants, you know, in America, and also here in the UK, contributing, you know, in education and in other parts, you know. So when you have that kind of story being told, when people try to tell negative stories, you can counter, especially, and give the historical perspective, you know, you can tell what happened and then what happened and created this scenario that we have now, where people are seen in a different light, where some culture is seen positively and others are seen negatively. You can give the timeline and show what happened and caused this friction to occur. But more fundamentally, you can look into the future and look into a positive outlook, a positive future where these cultures can fuse and we can have a beautiful place for all humanity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tolu. That will take us to the next question. Do you belong to any Nigeria or any African cultural association here in Stoke-on-Trent?
Well, so I go to church. My church is a multiracial church. There are white folks here. There are black folks there. There are people from Sri Lanka, you know, you name it. Also, like I said, I think of myself as citizen of the world, but in terms of any particular cultural organization, I'm part of the hip hop culture. You know, I think that's like a culture I like as well. And I'm a B-boy, you know, there's a B-boy crew that I train with sometimes, Under Attack. And then there's the Dance Society also in Staffordshire. You know, I go there sometimes, you know, and I do my music thing. You know, I'm part of a hip hop group Versatile and Pilgrim. So, you know, I practice my culture in these organizations, sometimes isolatedly, so in their own silos, but sometimes I bring it all together, you know. So, you know, I could bring the hip hop and do a hip hop show in church, you know, do a booby boying in church, you know, maybe rap in Yoruba, or, you know, put some Afro beats in there. So, you know, and I think that's one other thing about Africans. We are very religious people, you know. So, especially, you know, Yorubas, you know, Igbos, we do a lot of things in church. I see you, Ago, too. I see you in Emma Chooks, and that's a part of my culture, right? I see you playing your music, you know. I see you. So I do the same thing. I'm playing my music. You know, I have my headphones. I have my speakers on, you know. So I do musical events. In terms of belonging to a specific cultural organization, I wouldn't go as much as saying I belong to one. But every time I get my chance to associate with one and integrate with any of them, I do. But the church is probably my closest link to culture here in Stoke. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our time is almost up now. But before we end this program, I won't forget to ask you, what's your best Yoruba food?
Ah, hey, this is a very tough one. My best Yoruba food. Ah, hey, me, I don't get just one. I have plenty. Can I go? Okay, I like my iyan and egusi, you know, with nice pomo, goat meat, you know, egufe, you know, cow meat, brokoto. Assorted brokoto. You get me? I also like eshewu. I know it's not Yoruba, But, you know, I like okra, I like jollof rice, I like amala, I like ewedu, I like moi moi, I like da, I like, what they call this thing, so there's moi moi and there's this thing we make with beans now. See, now I'm missing Nigeria, I haven't seen it in a long time. Chai! I like,
begiri.
I like begiri, you know, I like all those, and matrix, you understand? You know, so I like all those, I like all... Personally, I like the whole cuisine of that whole, you know, I don't want to just say that whole Western African cuisine, you know, but especially that South, that's from that mid-belt South Niger, all the food where they make, you know, Niger, Yoruba food, Calabar food, Igbo food, you know, I like all of that, this thing. As long as it's healthy and it's wholesome, you know, when you eat it like this, you're going to say you don't chop, you get me? You say you go understand, you know, oh my, all right. So yes, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tolu. Our time is up now. We are so grateful for you having the time to visit our studio and sharing more light on immigration and culture. We hope that when we call upon you next time, you'll be available to also share light on other topics that we may deem interesting.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. Have a good day. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're welcome. Bye.
You are listening to the African Life Podcast with Agbo Uwabo. Each show, I will cover topics such as African culture, lifestyle, and politics from both home and away. To interact with the show, email studio@redshiftonline.org.